he's in the jailhouse now. He's in the jailhouse now. I told him once or twice to quit playing cards and shooting dice. He's in the jailhouse now.
And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Two 2008. The prequel trilogy is over, and millions of fans are left without Star Wars. No! Enter a brave group of Jedi led by Dave Filoni, who brought tales of the Jedi, clone armies, and Mandalorians to Cartoon Network, thus keeping hope alive in the galaxy. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi!
Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. In this episode, with freed prisoners in their possessions, and the brutal warden attempting to desperately thwart them, Obi-Wan, Ahsoka, and Anakin search for a way out of the Citadel and back to Coruscant. There will be more Farkin! R2 saves the day again! And another domino falls. We're talking about a counterattack this week. How you doing, Chris?
I'm doing good.
I'm doing good, too. Other than the fact that we both were talking about how our allergies are just like...
I'll take the good weather with the allergies, so... If a little bit of allergies comes along with the weather, I'm happy with that.
Your game.
The garage sales will start to bloom soon.
Yeah, I was so upset because I drove by, like, I was driving to work on Friday, and there was, like, a neighborhood garage sale that I drove right past, but I was already on my way to work, and I was like, no, I wanted to look at you. I was very upset. I couldn't stop and go look at this neighborhood-wide garage sale.
See, when I see that, I think, I can make more money here than I can at work. Hopefully, most likely.
Yeah, but I was already running late and stuff, so I really couldn't pull over. I very rarely run late for work, but that was like a rare exception, because they were doing construction on the road I was driving on, so I was stuck behind like a tractor for like 2 miles. Oh, I was like, no.
It's terrible in the summer. I'll be going on a delivery with my boss, and we'll be going someplace, and we can't stop, and I'll see the garage sale sign, and they'll watch me just go, look at that.
Boss, we should just go there on the way back.
Yeah. Oh, I try.
Yeah, if we stop there on the way back, you'll be fine. Find something nice for your wife and or husband, because I don't know what orientation your boss is. So, yeah. Well, do we just want to get right into it? Do we have any tangents? Any tangents?
Not off the top of my head.
I saw something really cute at work.
What's that?
So, I went to the bathroom, and, like, I work in a mall, so it's, like, a public bathroom, and this mom had her little boy in there, and the little boy had to be, like, no older than 4, and he was drying his hands under the air dryer, and he was shaking his hands and dancing, going, power, power, air, power, air, power, power, air, power, air, power, 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 air, power, air, power, 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 air, power, air, power, air, and I was just like, yes. And then now, ever since then, every time I put my hands under a hair dryer, I just go, power, power, air, power, air, power, power, air.
Now, is that a reference that I'm missing, or is that just his own song that he came up
with?
I
think it was his own song. Yeah. I think I saw, like, a tiny, tiny little future Lin-Manuel Miranda just now.
I had a girlfriend who used to babysit for this little girl named Miranda. And Miranda liked to go on the swing. Miranda was a little princessy, like, spoiled rotten little girl.
Mm-hmm.
But whenever she would be babysitting and I would go over to visit her and visit Miranda, Miranda wanted to swing on the swing, and she had a swing song called Swing World.
Huh?
And she'd push her out of the swing and she'd be just like, Swing World! What a joy!
Tiny Frank Sinatra?
Yeah. I need a push. Push me into swing world. So she was like a little lounge singer in the making, lounge singer princess girl. It was very amusing. I'm slowing down.
Oh, I do have something to add. So you know how I think it was last week I was really upset that Timeless got canceled?
Yes. Now it's all good.
It got saved.
All the salt is dried up.
For next year. For next cancellation season. No, but Timeless got saved. And it was really fun because Matt Lantern, who is the Anakin's voice actor in Clone Wars, he actually put up a video on, I think it was Instagram, and he, like, acted it out in, like, as this character, and he was just like, huh, we did it, guys. We went back in time. Like, I think Rufus is plugging up the lifeboat, and Lucy's changing, but we did it. We went back in time, and we changed NBC's mind. See you next season. I was just like, yes! So,
they're just messing with you.
No, they actually legit canceled it, and then it was a very rare case that the fans actually got to change the network's mind. It was not a publicity stunt. It is very, very incredibly hard and difficult to save a show from being canceled. Like,
It
was an incredibly rare circumstance for Timeless to not get uncanceled, I guess I should say. So, very, very rare. So, yes. Any other tangents? Going once.
Not that I can think of.
Going twice.
Getting ready to go see Alien Covenant next week.
You know, I never saw the original Alien movie.
You don't know what you're missing.
It's not my thing. It's not my thing. I'm sorry.
It's okay. I'll enjoy it.
You enjoy it twice as much for me.
Okay.
Okay. And too late. All right, let's continue. Ready?
I'm ready.
All right, so time for the episode.
And here's the episode.
Counterattack is the 63rd episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars and aired on March 4th, 2011. It was written by Matt Michnovitz and directed by Brian Callen O'Connell. Some extra information for you. If you care about continuity things, because some people do and some people don't, in the previous episode, aside from Commander Cody, Captain Rex, Echo, and Fives, there were only four other clones accompanying the rescue team. One was killed by Electro Mind, while another was shocked to death in an electrified wall, leaving only two clones left. However, in this episode, even though the remaining two clones were also killed by Security Door and OC Sub-X respectfully, another clone was seen accompanying the team, showing five clones had accompanied the team, despite the fact that only four were seen in the previous episode. In case you care about stuff like that.
They just needed some extra clone carnage potential.
Yeah. Something I forgot to mention last week, the Warden OC Sobek is also voiced by Obi-Wan's voice actor, James Arnold Taylor. Which is why I have a joke later on in my notes. I don't want to spoil anyone for at the moment, and this is for Chris, so I don't want to spoil anything else. So all I will say is that Echo's death comes into play in future seasons. Keep it in the back of your mind for much, much, much later bits with the canon unfinished episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right, and finally,
cryptic.
End the episode. What?
Cryptic.
Yeah. Echo's death has... You know how they had, like, two sets of unfinished story arcs that they released, but it's still canon?
Uh-huh.
By the way, I really hope you watch those, because I haven't seen them. I'm choosing not to watch them until we get there. FYI. So they'll be my first time watching them, too. And that's Utapau and Bad Batch. When we get to Utapau and Bad Batch... in that kind of time, Echo's death is very important. Just FYI. Don't spoil it for Chris, guys, because I know what it is. I've already been somewhat spoiled because I was just like, let me read everything. All right, so finally. In the episode Featurette, where Dave Filoni talks forever, we are introduced to... Wait, I lost my spot. Dave Filoni says, we are introduced finally to Captain Tarkin. Now, classic Star Wars fans will remember Tarkin, but as a Grand Moth, and in charge of the Death Star in A New Hope. Fans have wanted to see Tarkin. It happened organically in a story meeting to introduce one of the Imperial officers into Clone Wars. George, I believe, was the one who went, well, why not Tarkin for the Citadel series of episodes? And we thought, wow, what a great opportunity. At the time that this featurette was recorded, though Tarkin was only in one of the Star Wars films, two if you count his brief appearance in Revenge of the Sith, he made a lasting impression. It gave us an opportunity to explore the beginning of a relationship between Anakin and Tarkin, how they have similarities, how they kind of think the same. Anakin even begrudgingly admits that he doesn't think the Jedi are doing enough to win the war. Tarkin is one of the few characters in all of Star Wars that can tell Darth Vader to back off to a certain extent. When you get a character like Tarkin that has been in the classic films, the crew always responds. I think there's this little bit of extra effort that goes into everything surrounding that character, from the way someone poses, like the famous pose Tarkin has in the movie, to the rigging of the character to make sure we get a great performance out of the character. I knew the fans would have a very strong reaction to this character. We really needed to find an actor that could really portray this correctly. Stephen Stanton, who is a huge Star Wars fan, and I think he did an amazing job. It wasn't that he was just trying to be Peter Cushing through his voice. He was really trying to be the characterization of Tarkin brought to the character back in 1977. Stephen knew which word to accent and which ones to emphasize. And I think that it led itself to a great homage to the work of Peter Cushing in the original Star Wars as Grand Moff Tarkin.
Yeah, he sounded great.
Oh, he's so
good. He's got it down, yeah.
You know who else has it down?
Oh, so down.
We're getting down for real.
Yoda's down like a clown, going down on Charlie Brown. Downtown.
Downward dog. That's a yoga pose, by the way. It would make for a hell of a sex position, not even gonna lie.
I'm sure it's been utilized.
I'm sure
there's plenty of yoga classes around where people are going like,
Mm-hmm.
All right.
May or may not have participated in some of that.
Maybe Yoda take yoga class. Maybe Yoda teach Yoda class.
Yoda classes? No! What's the platitude this week, Yoda?
Downward Dagobah.
Downward Dagobah.
Okay. Anything that can go wrong will. In bed.
That's so true.
It's like Murphy's Law.
It is Murphy's Law.
They just use Murphy's Law for this one.
Yeah. But it's so true. Anything can go wrong. Like, you might, I don't know, like, not have enough lubricant. Things might slip out. Things might break. You might accidentally fart in someone's face. Like, it happens.
All kinds of things happen.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be an episode of Eat It and Beat It one day.
Storytellers. Someone might play Tenacious D.
It'll be an anthology show.
Did I ever tell you my Tenacious D story in sex?
There's a story that involves Tenacious D and sex. Here's our tangent, I guess.
Okay, here we go. So, back in college, and then we'll get back to the episode. Back in college, I was dating this guy, and we were really super serious. We had been dating for a while. And he was, like, my really first, like, kind of serious adult relationship. So we had a talk, and we were like, you know what, I think, you know, we feel like we are ready to start having sex. And it was a really big thing for me, because it was going to be my first time, and he was a couple years older than me, so he had already done it before. But, like, we had talked about it, and we felt like we were at that spot, like, that, in that place, and, like, actual adults we were. We went back to his place, like, we went out for a nice dinner, and we went back to his place, and we talked a bit and stuff like that, and then we went to his room, and it was getting to that time, and I was kind of nervous, and you could tell I was kind of nervous, so he was just like, hey, why don't I just put on some music, and I was like, okay, that would be really nice, and he goes, and he plays Fuck Me Gently by Tenacious D.
Oh, did it work?
But the thing is, I love Tenacious D, and that song is actually a really great romantic song, but I was just like, nope, not losing my virginity to Jack Black. No, that's not happening. I'm sorry.
Now there's some class for you, Hope.
Yeah, he was a really sweet guy. He graduated like 2 years before I did, and I was like, oh, I'm in school, and you're not, bye.
Jeez, some nice cha-cha music, some ambient electronic or something.
No, but it's actually Fucker Gently is actually a really nice, like, romantic song. It's like, you don't...
It has words to follow, which, like, I don't know. If we're going to talk about playing music during sex, unless it's, you know, like Marvin Gaye, like, hey, you know, let's get it on type music, you know, where the lyrics are just basically like, hey, baby, it's, you know, it's time. Time to put the kids to bed and put the Barry White on. But when you have like Tenacious D, which is full of like story lyrics and gags that pay off and stuff, so like it's like having sex with like CNN on or something. It's better than having CNN on, but you know what I mean. It's like,
yeah,
you could get distracted, or you could get taken down roads that are like just like kind of like, what, this is not sexy time.
I don't think I actually mentioned it, but, like, he purposely played Tenacious D to make me laugh because of the fact that I was nervous.
Right,
he wanted to make me laugh. So, and it worked. I got boned, so it was fine. So, whatever, it worked. But that's, like, not always, like, my, like, that's my, like, oh my god, I lost my virginity story and Tenacious D was there. That's my story. I don't know, I love Tenacious D. So, all right, act one. We had our tangent for the day.
I just picture someone losing their virginity and Jack Black and Kyle standing over, like, you know, with acoustic guitars, sweating. It's no good. No bueno.
She's gonna get in her pussy.
Singing, like, Paradise by the Dashboard Light by Meatloaf or something, you know, because Jack Black is only one step removed from Meatloaf. I don't know, listeners, if any listeners have any, I want to hear what the listeners lost their, what music listeners lost their virginity to.
That'd be fun.
I don't know.
Sounds like an episode of Eat It and Beat It. Songs
I don't think I was listening. I don't think I was listening to music. Before I lost my virginity, I did fool around to the B-52s once.
One time I want to pick the opening music, and I want to have something stupid.
Okay.
Like the Barney song or something. All right, act one.
Act one.
Act one, all right. So, here's the thing. To catch you up, in case you missed last week's episode, Jedi Master Evan Peel got taken by the bad guys to a big Jedi prison called the Citadel because he knows coordinates for super-secret hyperspace lanes. Anakin and Obi-Wan, with a small group of elite clone troopers that include Rex, Cody, and actual adorable baby Domino buddies, Fives and Echoes. Ahsoka snuck on the trip, much to Anakin's chagrin, but she ended up being super useful. And then there's a Dick Warden in the Citadel, and his name is Sobek. And he has booby traps all over the prison, and I just said boobies. Boobies! That's why I paused. I was just like, in my head I went, booby, booby traps, booby!
I'm just thinking of the term Dick Warden.
Dick Warden.
I'm the Dick Warden of Penis Town.
Oh my god, we are actual 5-year-olds.
Sounds like an insult, like a schoolyard. What the hell is wrong? An insult. It sounds like a schoolyard insult, you know. Shut up, Dick Warden.
Whatever.
Or it sounds like an actor. Dick Warden.
Dick Warden. Dick Warden in. Check my handcuffs in my... okay, so... He has booby traps.
Dick Warden in the penal colony.
Well, so Beck has booby traps all over the prison. boobies. Jedi Free Master Peel, and he reveals that he only has half of the hyperspace coordinates. His captain has the other half. So they go to find Peel's captain to try, and it turns out that it's fucking Tarkin, aka Farkin, as we have named him last week. Fucking Tarkin, aka Farkin. The group split up to protect the coordinates and try and make distractions to get out. Master Peel and Obi-Wan go one way. Ahsoka and Anakin lead Farkin through an abandoned tunnel when the Citadel was first got made. That was last week's episode. Now to this week's episode. So Anakin calls R2, which is leading a group of reprogrammed battle droids, to get ready to pick them up as soon as they meet up with Obi-Wan. So Obi-Wan and Peel are doing a Jedi's favorite pastime, crawling through the air vents. I swear they teach Jedi classes on how to crawl through air vents. They find a vertical tunnel that will lead them up to the landing pad where they need to go meet Anakin at. Cody climbs up ahead and runs right into a probe droid. Master Peel jumps up and slices the probe droid in half, but it triggers the security doors. Everyone scrambles to get out of the way of the doors, but one poor clone gets caught, and he gets cut in half. So, rest in peace. He needs a nickname.
Rest in pieces.
Rest in pieces! Reese's? His name is going to be Reese's, because Reese's Pieces?
Yes. She is so easily amused, Hope.
That's terrible. I love it. Master Peel
and it goes with the candy theme that we've been running, so yeah.
That's true. Master Peel slices through the door with his lightsaber, and Obi-Wan's crew will now be slowed down as they now have to cut their way through all of the doors. Actual Butthole Warden, that's his name this week, Actual Butthole Warden, Sobek, thinks things are going pretty well until Count Dooku holoscapes him. Dooku is like, "You seem to be screwing up over there. Do I need to come take care of things myself?" And Sobek grovels, saying that he will get the hyperspace coordinates, and he kisses ass until Dooku leaves, and then Sobek strangles one of his droids. Down in the tunnels, Funky Tarkin is like, "Yes,
I thought you said Funky Tarkin. Do the Funky Tarkin.
Funky Tarkin. I'm gonna do the dances." He would do some dumb dance like a polka or something. Down in the tunnels, fucking Tarkin is like, "Yes, I admire this fortress. I want one for myself." And Ahsoka is like, "Dude, this place is horrible." And fucking Tarkin is like, "It shows how well it was made. Too bad it's not our prison." And Anakin agrees with Farkin, which just takes Ahsoka by surprise and disgust. And Anakin tells her to go on ahead and lead the mid while he covers their flank. We pop into Coruscant for 2 seconds, where Wet Blanket Windu and Plo Koon chat about how to get their friends out of the Citadel. What'd you think of Act 1, Chris?
I loved it. It's funny, in the first, like, couple scenes, Farkin kinda, he has that like, somebody's holding a turd under my nose look. And he looks kind of, and the younger Tarkin looks a little bit like Mr. Bean sometimes. You know, the Rowan Atkinson? He's got a little bit of Mr. Bean going on, which is fun.
Yay. I like that image.
Nice sound design in this episode, I noticed, especially with R2 and his droids. Like, all their foot clanks and just the space of where everything's happening sounds really good. It sounds very Star Wars-y. It just excellent sound design on this episode. And we're seeing a little bit of the Anakin and Tarkin bromance blossoming in this. And it's nicely done. It's nicely done showing the seeds of, you know, of the Empire there in just a few little lines. My only other note, and this is something I've noticed more in Clone Wars, but this was especially bad. When you take your lightsaber and you melt your way through the floor, you know, and we're talking like a foot thick of metal, usually you'll see, you know, just burned through and slag. Is that not molten hot? Like, when you have stuff, if you've ever seen anybody doing, like, blacksmithing or working with molten glass or anything, You take a piece of cloth and you put it near that and it'll burst into flames from the heat.
Yep, been there, done that. When I used to weld in college and mm-hmm. building sets, you don't touch that or get anything near it because it will set on fire.
It'll just catch. It's hot enough to start something on fire. Chucky Yoda is just hanging out there with his armpit sitting, you know, like hanging out in that hole, like hugging the edge of that molten stuff they just cut through. Just like, hey, it looks like we're gonna have to cut our way through. It's just like, aren't you just like cooking like a little, like a, you know, like a Hawaiian pig roast right now?
I forgot that you call Master Pill Chucky Yoda.
Yeah, that's what he kind of is, or Boris Badenoff, or Mad-Eye Moody. Space Mad-Eye Moody. But, like, that always bothers me. It's just like, that should be really hot. And having them jump through it, it's like, okay, I think Jedi could probably, like, sort of repulse heat or something. You know, if they can throw people around, maybe they can form a little shield around them so they don't get burned quick, you know, as quickly or something like that, although it didn't really help Anakin that much, but he had a few limbs hacked off. But yeah, but just to hang out there, you know, you would think that the molten metal, it would be just like, ah, you know, molten metal dripping down the side of your body. It's just one of those little things that bothers me, and this time they took it a little too far.
Mm.
Too far this time.
It's one thing if it's like Grievous kicking in a hot door because he's metal.
And then they'll sort of jump through it or walk or step through it or something. Okay, he was just sort of like hanging in it. You know, he had one arm up on the side like he was hanging out with, you know, on the side door, then the passenger seat of a truck or something.
Maybe this is like, you know, lightsabers have some kind of weird technology where it like automatically cools or something. I mean, this is the
then
galaxy
why would it glow
of far,
red?
Far away. This is the galaxy of hyperspace space whales, so anything is possible. So maybe lightsabers have like a magical cooling agent, so it's hot for like 0.2 seconds, and then you're just like, oh, that's pleasant.
Then it would, yeah, but it would still wouldn't glow red. You know, metal usually doesn't glow red unless. Or bright orange. Unless it's been melted.
I'm trying to help.
Yeah, I know.
So maybe it glows red, and then the metal's like, oh, that was nice, and it just, like, expels heat quickly, and then it's, like, ice cold. You know, like Outcast. So, like, you know, what's cooler than being cool? Ice cold.
It would be back to dark metal again, though. You know what I'm saying? I'm saying.
Ladies. Yeah, I'm
glowing,
singing Outcast.
Science-wise, is an expression of the energy being released. Just a minor science quibble. Nothing major. That's all my notes for Act One. I really liked it. It's good, fast-paced.
I swear, while you were talking, I heard music in the background coming from your end.
Oh, no, it might have been that somebody was driving by in a motorcycle or something. It might have sounded like music.
Oh, that must have been it. But, like, when you were like, it's a minor science quibble. And then I heard, da-da. That's like science.
It's the science theme playing.
Science. Bill Nye pops in. Pill, pill, pill.
Somebody say science?
Oh, man, I would love it to, like, whenever I just say the word science, if Bill Nye would just, like, kick in the door and just be like, science! That would just make my day all the time. I'd be like,
right,
yeah,
until
fine.
After a while, he's just like, will you knock it off? It's 8 times today.
No,
I have a conference.
All right, well, my only notes for this section was, I think I mentioned it last week, but I said I can see why a lot of the season is focused on Ahsoka seeing different points of view. Like when she met the Separatists, and then she got some like dark side mojo in the Mortis arc and stuff like that. And it's starting to push her very slowly away from Anakin and away from the Jedi Order. And it's continuing in this opening act. When Anakin agrees with Tarkin that he thinks that the prison is really well built, you see the disgust on Ahsoka's face. Like, she just, like, looks at him like, what?
Right, her quibbles with Anakin are going beyond just like, whatever, to like, yeew. She's starting to realize they have some fundamental differences.
Yeah, it's starting to get to, like, you know, when you're getting older and, you know, your entire life, you're like, my parents are always right. And then you start getting older and you're like, I have actually differences from my parents, but you don't want to really say anything because you're just like, they're my parents. But you're like, I don't, what you're saying is kind of like making me queasy a little bit. It's kind of like that. I noticed that one. And then just a quick question about Anakin. The Citadel was created to hold rogue Jedis, right? It's not supposed to be like a really nice place because it's a really tough prison. If Anakin was any other Jedi, would it be strange for him to agree with Tarkin? And the reason I say that is because of Ahsoka's reaction.
Jedis that would agree with Anakin. You know, I'm sure there's a few more man of action Jedi out there.
Master Peel seems like one of those too.
He's one of those guys. It's funny, they just make him very Eastern European, like, you know, I play my cards close to hand so moose and squirrel do not know what I am up to, you know. So he doesn't really give a lot of opinions. Every once in a while, and like anything close to opinion, positive or negative, with him is just sort of a grimace, you know.
So yeah.
I picture him almost along more the line of what's his name from Rogue One and Clone Wars.
The guy with Turret.
Played by why can't I remember his name?
Wait, was he the guy with the machine gun?
With the fake legs.
What?
With the fake legs, got blowed up in the beginning. At the midway point. He was in Clone Wars, Rebel Leader.
Krennic? Oh no, Saw Gerrera.
Duh. Man, why I couldn't spit out that name. But yeah, he reminds me a little more of Saw Gerrera, like maybe because he's scarred up and, you know, and looking kind of, you know, worse for wear. But he doesn't mess around. And I like how he uses his mini Yoda powers to just like, oh, if I need to kill a probe droid, I'll just hop right up here. Zoom. Right up in the air. Yeah. I'll just hop on over people's shoulders.
That happened in the third arc because, like, he was riding on Anakin's back while Anakin was driving a speeder. And I was just like, oh, that's cute. Oh, it's like Luke and Yoda on Dagobah. Only Anakin and a very angry Chucky Yoda.
That's right. I like him. He's like the grizzled cop Yoda, you know?
Mm-hmm. You know, I would like to see him. We don't get a lot of Master Peel. I would kind of like to see how he is around Padawans, because how you treat children can say, or like someone who like either looks up to you or just treats someone with insulting, how you treat someone that's less fortunate says a lot about who you are.
Yeah, no, I picture they put him on the advanced training for more adult Jedis and Yoda for the kids.
I think it'd be really nice. Like, I could see him being like really super tough, but like he's around kids and they're all like playing with him, and he just like lets them. You know, like when you have an old dog and like a puppy, and the puppy's just like, yeah, and the old dog just lays there. That's kind of how I imagine it. Like, he's just like, okay, kids, come play with me.
Yeah, he'd be Walter Matthau in the Bad News Bears.
No, I don't understand that reference.
Oh, Hope. You need to see the Bad News Bears.
I'm sorry, I'm a youngin.
Not the remake of Bad News Bears, mind you, but the 70s Bad News Bears. It's about a grizzled Walter Matthau who is a drunk and ends up coaching the worst Little League team ever.
Oh,
and it utilizes kids swearing in it so well. Resource for swearing kids. It's just awesome.
I totally know what you're talking about now.
Jodie Foster.
I had a blank.
Jodie Foster is their ringer that they get, like, she and this other guy are like they're two star players if they get to. It's a great movie.
Yeah.
Lots of swearing. Lots of swearing. It's classy.
I think he'd be really cute with kids. Well, I don't have anything else for Act 1, do you?
No, I think he drinks beer, too.
The one Jedi that drinks, and he's just like, ah! Yeah,
he drinks beer out of a can, just like...
You know, I bet him and Quinlan Voss hang out a lot, and like he just silently just like listens to Quinlan talk about all his great Avengers, and he just silently drinks. And then, like,
or he drinks, like, space vodka or something like that.
Out of, like, the droids' heads. Like, he does a shooter out of droids' heads. Yep. And he's like, I can't destroy today. Fill it up.
Space Prost.
So, Act 2?
Act 2.
Act 2. Okay. So, down in the tunnels, fucking Tarkin looks at Rex and goes, I can't believe we're being led by a child. This is stupid. And Rex is like, oh boy, don't you speak bad about my girlfriend or my child with Anakin, depending on Hope feels like shipping me with this week. Ahsoka is strong, talented, and brilliant, so you shut up before I shoot you in the face. And the problem the group has with their outdated maps is that Ahsoka leads the group to a dead-end wall. Farkin gives Ahsoka a little sneer, and I wanted to punch him in the face. R2 and his droids land on a platform and wait for Obi-Wan, but there are security guards there with some big-ass turret guns. R2 tries to beep his way out of it, but the tactical droid doesn't believe R2. Luckily, R2's platoon of battle droids improvise, and they quote-unquote capture R2 and lead him away. But the tactical knows that it's a ploy, and he calls into actual butthole Sobek, and Sobek tells them to guard the ship to lure Obi-Wan and his men into a trap. R2 and the droids knows that there's a trap being set up, so they set out to find a way to contact Obi-Wan. Ahsoka, Rex, and Farkin stare down their dead-end wall going, this is quite a pickle. Assassin and Super Commando droids show up, and Anakin and the clone troopers fight them. Anakin's a bit of a jerk, and he's just like, Ahsoka, you're supposed to blow up the wall! Didn't Master Plo tell you when he assigned you here? And Ahsoka is like, well, apparently Rex and the ARC troopers didn't know either. They didn't blow up the wall. You gotta communicate these things, Anakin. We're not mind readers. And the assassin droids are tough, because they have shields. But Ahsoka thinks quick on her feet. She saves one detonator and uses it to blow up the droids and the wall. So girls, Anakin's group continues on their way. They reach a gas pipe that will lead them back to R2's ship. They have to check all their equipment, because the slightest electricity will blow them all up. Farkin is like, well, I hope the droids don't blow us up. Anyway, Obi-Wan, Peel, and Cody and their men camp out in the air vents, and they can see R2's shuttle, but they don't see R2, and they're not sure if it's a trap or not. They sneak down to a lower walkway under the platform to check out the situation. They hop down to a platform below and call to Anakin. But actual butthole Sobek taps into Obi-Wan's communicator and boasts that he did, in fact, capture Obi-Wan and Master Peel in a trap, as they are then surrounded by droids. Sobek welcomes Peel and Obi-Wan to his evil crib, and he's all smarmy, and he's all like, yeah, totally won, I got you. He makes a threat that if Master Peel doesn't give him half of the coordinates, he'll start executing Peel's men. Peel holds his ground, saying that this is war. His men are willing to die to protect the info. And Sobek's like, well, okay then, and he shoots a clone point blank in the head. Before he can shoot another clone, one of Sobek's tactical droids says that they located Anakin's group. Sobek orders Obi-Wan and his team to be taken to interrogation and tortured slowly. Meanwhile, R2 is working on saving the day, again, because we all know that he's just the greatest hero in the Star Wars universe. R2's droids intercept Obi-Wan's group and takes the Jedi to escort them the rest of the way. R2 meets up with Obi-Wan, and they head for the shuttle. Obi-Wan says that Anakin will switch to Plan B. Wow! What do you think of Act 2, Chris?
Anakin switching to the morning after pill?
I thought the same thing, too! By the way, that pill is an asshole.
So there's a gag in here that kind of showed up in Rogue One.
What was it?
It's the one with the robot abusing his master to deceive other, you know, or, there's a scene where he, like, smacks R2 on the head and he's like, come on, you, I'm in charge now. Which is sort of similar to when the robot and the reprogrammed Imperial droid in Rogue One sort of roughs up his captain.
K2 and Cassian.
Yep. And damn, man. Shoot a clone right in the face.
Yeah.
And then then he's definitely doing a little bit of last time I was saying he was sort of doing Christopher Lloyd and Christopher Walken, but after he shoots the clone in the face, he does this sort of like puts his arms out with the gun and like does this sort of grin that's very Christopher Walken and just sort of like, yeah, so yeah, I did that, you know.
Yeah. Which,
very, very violent, even in the PG-13 Clone Wars. So in two acts, we've had one clone get bisected and now another one shot in the face. This is like, I mean, we've seen like mass battles where clones are just dropping like flies, but this one's brutal.
You know, they could have been like honestly a little bit more brutal because, you know, with that clone that got cut in half, that top half is still, you know, will be alive for a few minutes. And so when Master Peel was like, we lost one, there could have been like screaming in the background.
That's
that would
true.
Have been brutal. Though knowing Cody or something.
It's gonna be all right, right, Sarge?
Yeah, they probably like knowing like Peel or Cody or something, they probably just shot that poor clone in the head or something just to put it out of his misery. Oh, babies.
Oh jeez.
Babies. I'm being mean to my clones tonight. This is very unlike me.
But I'm liking this. This is a very Star Wars episode. It's not like huge in the character moments, but when there are little character moments, it's done within the action. And like this one, the one where Anakin's yelling at her for not knowing the plan, and then in the next 20 seconds, she like solves both problems, bang bang, and then it's just like there you go, problem
fixed.
Well,
that's the thing, like, Anakin's yelling at her about her not knowing the plan, but, I mean, obviously Rex didn't know what was going on either, because he was like, oh, there's a dead-end wall. I mean, if he had been briefed on it, he obviously wasn't briefed on it, too. Because he was staring at the wall like Ahsoka was.
That and her reaction to Tarkin are just two little scenes, but they're just nice little, you know, reminders that Ahsoka is getting extremely competent and is starting to, you know, break from Anakin a little bit, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's nice, and it's just done within the story, and it just sort of, they don't dwell on it, it just sort of, go, you know, I mean, she basically just sort of gives him a little look in this one, you know, after she, a little bit of, like, there.
You know, thinking
there
like
you go.
I think it was a season one episode, but there was an episode where Ahsoka disobeyed Anakin, but, like, she didn't see that she was about to be overrun, and so Obi-Wan and Anakin had to, like, go save her, and she was like, what are you doing? We're about to win! They're like, no, you're about to die! Get on the ship now! And, like, they flew up, and she saw that she was literally about to lose. That feels different from this one, because I feel like that was, like, Ahsoka was like, I must prove myself. But two seasons later, she's grown to where she doesn't really have to prove herself anymore. She just is.
She just does it, yeah.
She just does it. So that's super nice character growth for her. These are really good nuts. Sorry, I'm eating nuts. D's nuts?
It was too easy. It was too easy. I thought about it. That silence was me. Was me bopping it around in my mind, but it was just way too easy.
You know what's really good?
What?
You want to say it? I know you want to say it.
No, I'm not going to say it. It's too easy.
Come on.
I like a challenge.
So what's that about D. Bradley Baker?
Everybody knows that D is nuts.
What?
these nuts.
There you go, there you go. So what else did you think about Act 2?
That's about all. I enjoyed it. I like the Star Warsiness of it going back and forth, you know, victory captured. And I like that R2 has whipped these battle droids into the smartest not that they're smart, but they're the smartest battle droids we've seen yet.
Mhm. But they're still goofy, which is really nice.
Yeah. They're still dorks, but they're
smart dorks.
Yeah. It's just lucky that R2's on our side.
Mhm. So for me, I had a laugh at the line when Obi-Wan said that Sobek wasn't as he pictured, and he said that Sobek had such a soft voice. And I laughed at that because Obi-Wan and Sobek are voiced by James Arno Taylor. It's the same voice actor.
And it's a very common Obi-Wan sort of way of taking the piss out of his competition. He did that in the way back in the movie, in the very beginning.
He does it with Ventress all the time, too.
And Ventress, too, but... Well, he takes a piss out of Ventress, but he literally, like... I think he, like, looked at the guy and was like, yeah, I thought you were... It might have been Grievous in Episode 3. He's like, I thought you were going to be taller than that.
That was Anakin that said that.
That's right, because Anakin hadn't met him.
Which is still so weird.
But maybe that's just a Jedi thing. But remember the sort of Scottish guy with the long nose from the movie in the beginning? And they sort of sit down and Obi-Wan just sort of like...
Oh, yeah. And they have tea.
Yeah. And Obi-Wan's just sort of like, oh, yeah, you know, you're a great leader and you beat me. But at the same time, he's sort of subtly browbeating him for, like, not being as tough, big and tough as he thought he was going to be and stuff.
Yeah, and he was just like, well, of course we're going to have to talk about my terms of surrender or my men.
Yeah, let's have some tea.
So we had to be civilized. But I like that little joke because he was just like, your voice sounds soft and nice. And I'm like, that's James Arnold Taylor talking to himself.
Like rich Corinthian leather.
So, you know, I was thinking about Peele. And he's definitely a different sort of kind of Jedi. And as we talked about in Act 1. And we know that Jedi and clones understand that this is war. They are fighting a war. They could die anytime. It's just part of the gig. But also, like, aren't the Jedi supposed to try to preserve life, too? Like, they're supposed to try and save all life? And this is probably just the 22-minute time restrictions that they have for the episodes. But it just felt kind of not very Jedi that Peele didn't even try to at least make an argument or talk to Sobek before Sobek shot his man in the face. Like, that just seemed very un-Jedi, like... I mean, they might have
summed up the psychology of Sobek and been like, yeah, this guy isn't gonna react to us trying to buy time well, you know?
Mm-hmm. But that just seemed like such an un-Jedi thing, too, because I'm also used to, like, Obi-Wan just being like, hey, why don't we talk about this, and, you know?
Yeah, but Jedi will also do a sort of, like, let's wait and see how this develops, you know? And they lost a clone, but they sort of rode that situation out, and the next thing you know, they were basically walking free again, you know? They were back in the hands of their people.
Yeah, but I don't... That moment just felt very un-Jedi-like. It just... That was a weird moment for me. Though I really do like that scene, because I think that's probably one of the highest, like, stake moments of the entire episode.
Well, they're dealing with a prison warden. Prison wardens heard and seen every little delaying tactic and all that.
Yeah, but, like, that was a really good scene just to really define the stakes of the episode, because that it just shows that it's really super easy to die here.
Yes.
As the clones are falling like flies. Poor babies. And the only other note is, I actually really like Sobek as a villain. I think he's a really good villain. I mean, yeah, he's a little comical in, like, his voice and delivering his lines, but, I mean, he's clearly deadly. Like, he's been, you can tell he's kind of unhinged, which makes him sort of unpredictable, and I'm choking on nuts, sorry. I'm choking on nuts.
Yeah.
What kind of nuts am I choking on?
These nuts. It's these nuts.
But you can tell he's kind of unhinged, which makes him, like, super unpredictable. We also see that he's also really smart. Like, he's staying up to pace with the Jedi moving around his prison. Like, he's you know, sensing their moves, and he's like, they're probably going to be here. And, of course, like, we know that this is his element. Like, you know, this is his prison, and this is his turf, and the Jedi are on it. We don't know how he would handle, say, like, a space battle, but I like seeing that Sobek isn't a stupid villain. Like, he's really smart, and he kind of makes Grievous look like a chump. Sorry, Chris.
I've got notes to that. I've got notes on that coming after Act 3.
Oh, God.
So I won't reply to that statement yet.
Okay.
But I have things to say about that, yes. Well, I also think he's unhinged because I think his prison, it's like he probably used to run his prison. He was a boss at the prison, and that was his thing, and that was what the prison did. And now it's under Separatist control, and he's got Dooku barking, you know.
But the thing is like, we don't know if he was placed there, if he was there before or after the war started. That's something we don't know about him.
I get the feeling that he's been there. He's probably been there. Like, in a prison like that, you'd probably want, like, somebody there as, you know, as continuously as possible who knows, and he knows every in and out of it, and he knows how somebody would try and escape, and... You know, he's seen people try to escape and, you know, all that. That's just sort of how I pictured it. It's like, now I have to deal with this prison, and now the Separatists are running the prison, and I have to deal with the Separatists, and now I have to deal with Jedi actually breaking into the prison now because it's a Separatist thing now, you know? So now it's a war zone. On top of just being, like, his little prison out in the middle of nowhere that just had rogue Jedis in it.
But it seems like he's kind of having fun doing it, too. Because, like, last week, like, he would set off a booby trap and be, like, laughing. He's just like, yes, get
well, you'd have to enjoy your job if you were going to be doing it for a long time and be good at it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's probably his place. And doing that stuff is his, that's his thing, you know? That's his bread and butter. And
that's
his
jam.
Thing is definitely not talking to Dooku on Holoskype. It's not part of the bargain, and he's not into it, you know?
Yeah. But that's really all I had for Act 2.
All right. You want to get into the feels?
Feels. Yes.
Here's where
all
Hope's
right.
feels
oh.
come into play.
Except for I lost my spot. There's my spot. Alright, so, Act 3. So, Team Anasoka Parkin, thanks, Team Anasoka Parkin is climbing up the gas pipe to rendezvous with Obi-Wan. Fucking Tarkin is bitching about the trip, and Anakin is just like, so help me, don't make me come back there. And Tarkin is like, you know, I feel sort of a bro vibe from you, Anakin. I feel like we're going to do super awesome things one day, like blow up some planets or something. But all your comrades really suck. I don't like them. They're stupid. And Anakin is like, you're stupid. Jedi are awesome. I mean, we can parkour and shit. Look right there. Ahsoka's parkouring right now. We rock. And Farkin scoffs and goes, you know, if you guys really super wanted to, the Jedi could have ended this war already. Your stupid code keeps you from acting. Dumb peacekeepers should never lead in a military. And Anakin pauses, and then he agrees with Farkin. He thinks that the Jedi could do more in the war, too. And Farkin is just like, bro, we're bros now, hooray! Ahsoka finds a way out of the gas pipe and meets a battalion of droids. The men scramble out of the gas line to help her fight. They all take cover, and Anakin grabs a detonator. He tosses it into the fuel line, and the whole thing explodes, taking out all the droids. And Anakin's like, okay then, plan B. And Tarkin is just like, no one told me about plan B. And Anakin is like, well, that's because you're not a Jedi. And he puts on his glasses and he shimmies away. Meanwhile, shit is hitting the fan for actual butthole Sobek as Obi-Wan got away, Anakin's team is blowing stuff up, and to top it all off, Count Dooku wants to chat on the phone again, but not in a pleasant, like, hey, let's talk about the new episode of RuPaul's Drag Race kind of sort of chat. Sobek notices on the map that the gas line got destroyed, and he realizes that's where Anakin is, and so he ignores Dooku's calls, and he wants all his troops to go to the airfield. Obi-Wan and R2's droids stage a little play. They tell the droids guarding the ship that they're transferring the prisoners to a new prison. The bad droids get a message that all of the prisoners have escaped and no one can board the shuttle. And a fight breaks out, and the bad guys have big-ass turret cannons, too. And they all seem to be pinned down, but then Anakin's team arrives with reinforcements. Tarkin and Obi-Wan immediately start quibbling over what to do. Tarkin wants to take the ship to use the weapons. Obi-Wan says no, the turret cannons will blow up the ship. And Anakin is like, oh my god, ladies, you are both pretty. There are droids on speeders incoming. And the fight wages, and Master Peel and Anakin steal one of the speeders to help cover them from the sky. Here we go. Echo spots an assassin droid manning one of the turret cannons and tells Anakin that it's going to blow up the escape ship. Anakin gets shot down and Echo realizes that he has to protect their shuttle. He picks up a shield and makes a break for the ship. Five screams out in horror, watching his only remaining brother from the Domino Squad get blown up with a ship. He hesitates, but he has no choice but to leave. Obi-Wan calls a retreat for everyone and they flee from the airfield. On Coruscant, Plo Koon, Wet Blanket Windu, and Yoda gets a call from Obi-Wan and Anakin. They're going to need a rescue, and they're going to need it fast. Plo Koon says that they're on their way. Back at the Citadel, the Jedi and Farkin discuss needing to hide out or lay low until the Council can arrive with reinforcements. Fives, fresh off the death of his friend, flat out questions, how are they going to get there? It's impossible terrain to cross, let alone land a ship. And Anakin says that they're not just any fugitives escaping from the Citadel, and the group presses on. Fives pauses for a moment, looks back at the Citadel where Echo died, and continues on until next week's episode. The end!
Another episode that just ends.
Yeah, you know, I think if they would have just ended it with, like, actually, no, I mean, with them, like, saying, like, you know, let's retreat, and just ended it there, I kind of forgot about the little bit afterwards.
You know, you see the abandoned the shattered helmet on the ground and everything, but yeah, it's odd that these two episodes aren't as, you can watch them as individual episodes, but they're not as much as they usually do. Even when they do the arcs, it's definitely been like cliffhangering on the last two. Not super cliffhangering where they're literally hanging off a cliff, but, like, story's not over yet.
Yeah, and it's going to start doing that pretty much from here on out, too.
Yeah. Not that I have a problem with that, but, man, R2's droids are getting pretty badass. I'm liking them.
And I had a note about that, too, because, like, there's one scene where, like, the droids are, like, handing clones detonators to throw, and I was just like, they're all working together.
And the lighting is nice, and everything's at night, but there's a nice, like, purple glow to everything. It just looks really nice. All right. The warden, he's basically Grievous Light. I don't think he's more badass than Grievous. He's more of a wimp than Grievous, because he's just like, give me time to prepare to talk to Dooku. Grievous will just hang up on him. Grievous is just like, I can't hear you. We're getting some space interference, and he'll hang up on him and be just like, well, screw it, and then abandon ship. Whereas this guy's a little, you know, this guy sweats it more.
I do, yeah. I like him a little bit more, though, and I guess it's just because, like, the moment that Grievous always fucks up, he runs, and, like, the warden has no place to go, so he's just like, fine, I'll do it.
I have no place left to go. Yeah, it looks like we're giving up a clone every act. Mm-hmm. A clone's gonna die horribly every act in this episode. I love the look that Obi-Wan just gives when the droid's like, hey, you guys are, you know, basically not, you know, just starting to figure it out, and Obi-Wan knows he's going to have to shoot the droid in the face. He just gives it this look of like, yeah, you idiot. And then he blasts it. It was just a nice little... This one was full of nice little touches, you know, especially especially when you're dealing with characters that are basically sort of just like glorified puppets, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They're sort of puppet version, you know, like marionette versions of the real actors. So when they get those little moments that sort of capture not just Obi-Wan, but a little bit of the Ewan McGregor to it too, it's really nice. And they don't overplay it, you know, they don't oversell it. It's just a little thing like the actor would put in there. It's great. That's about all I had for Act 3, though.
Okay, you ready?
I know you've got some stuff to say.
I got stuff to say, so I'm just gonna go straight down my notes. Normally, like, I always kind of make fun of all their, like, over-parkouring from the Jedi, and I think it's kind of silly. But in this episode, like, Ahsoka is, like, super parkouring everywhere. And she's, like, swinging on things and jumping on things. But I kind of like it in this episode because she wasn't supposed to be here. She's clearly overcompensating to prove that she can be on this mission. And so I thought that was a very nice character choice that they added in because she doesn't normally do that.
Yeah, that's what I like about it. This episode, it's physical things, it's action things that are, you know, little things that pull out the character moments rather than dialogue or exposition.
Yeah, because like she's definitely not as big of a parkourer as Anakin is, but she's like super doing it this episode, and I was just like, why is she doing it? Oh, and then I kind of thought about something with Anakin. Do you think he kind of wants the war to continue? And that's only just because in the chaos of everything, he can hide his marriage to Padme.
Well, that would be one of the... That would be, like, a perk of it for sure, you know?
I mean, yeah, it takes him away from Padme, but if there was no war, I mean, what would he be doing? Like, they'd be like, Anakin, why aren't you staying at the Jedi Temple as often? And he'd be like,
Yeah. I think it's one of... I think he loves it, too. You know,
yeah,
he's a adrenaline addict.
So of course, like the big moment in this episode is that Anakin and Tarkin bonding over war meant the things, and it's nice to have that big nod to their relationship that they have when he's Vader. But then I kind of got to thinking, do you think Vader actually likes Tarkin? Like, and I don't mean that, like, oh man, they're best friends kind of thing, because he's dark side and he doesn't really like anything. But do you think there's, like, this, like, little tiny inkling in Vader that's just like, this guy's kind of cool, and he's awesome, and he's evil like I am. I like to keep him around. Or do you think Vader just sees, like, everyone's as just, like, tools to him?
It's like a coworker that you work really good with that you might not hang out with normally, but you enjoy working with them, and I'm thinking Tarkin is like, okay, that's somebody that Anakin's working with that thinks a little bit more like him, you know? He's more, you know, Tarkin's obviously an evil Nazi bastard at heart, and but at the same time, he has a logic to it, you know? He has a cold, calculating logic to it that Anakin shares of like, yeah, this prison is great. It serves its function very well, and that's something that Anakin probably isn't exposed to very much, so it's probably nice for him to have somebody that he can be like, yeah, we could be doing a little bit more to stop this war, you know, with, and that won't totally be just like, Anakin, now you know, you know, that's not the Jedi way. Tarkin's just like, yeah, you know, like Palpatine. It's probably a little like his relationship with Palpatine, you know?
Yeah.
It's somebody who's willing to indulge that side of him, and Anakin is the Jedi who is more likely and willing to indulge that evil side of himself. He's an enabler.
Though I will say, it's not in my notes, but this little scene with Tarkin and the one earlier when they were talking about the prison, I think, did more to push Anakin towards the dark side than all three Mortis arcs combined.
Yes.
It's all you needed.
This arc is the antidote to me from the last arc. This is doing just about all the things that the last arc was doing without it being of like serious portent and without exposition. It's doing it just in the course of an escape, you know, a cat and mouse game and an escape. And that's very Star Wars. Star Wars is visual storytelling, and this does it.
Yeah. I really enjoyed that. Okay, so I have a little Vader tangent that I kind of started thinking about when I was thinking about Vader. So let me read this first, and then I want your response. So what is Vader's agenda? Like, have we ever, like, gotten from Vader what he wants out of the narrative of Star Wars? Because, you know, he's supposed to keep the Empire together for Palpatine, and he's supposed to keep it enforced and everything. But eventually, all the Sith Lords will try to kill their master so they can be the lead Sith, and then they get an apprentice. So if Vader actually succeeded in doing that, like, what would Vader actually want to happen after that? Like what?
He would just become the Emperor. He would rule the galaxy and bring order to it, the order that he wants.
That's so boring. Like, what if he doesn't, like, want to rule the galaxy? Like, you know, like
he does, but he wanted to back in episode 2. He was saying, hey, if somebody just, like, got out there who bypassed all, you know, any kind of controls and just did stuff, that would end things really well. And you know Padme'd be like, yeah, but then you're at the whim of that person. And he's like, yeah, but what if that person was me? You know, yeah. I'm a great guy.
But like, I started thinking, it's like all the Sith seem to have like a thing, like Palpatine's master like wanted to learn like immortality and stuff like that. I was just like, what is, but I guess it seems like such a stereotypical like bad guy thing to do.
He's an orphan kid, you know. He's a traumatized kid. He wants order, and he wants it in the whole galaxy. He doesn't just need a neat room, you know. He needs the whole galaxy to be in order. He wants justice for all the like horrible things that, like, you know, he was a slave as a kid.
So then I started thinking, like, did that change when Luke came into the picture, do you think? Like, did that change what he wanted?
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure with Luke he was like, you know, together we could rule the galaxy, and there might have been also a part of him thinking maybe there could also be some redemption from this, you know?
Yeah. I wonder where it stopped being to where, like, I wanted to change this to where, like, oh my god, I'm kind of stuck in this now, and now I hate myself for it, and now I just, like, hate everything about myself, and so now I'm just gonna hate everything.
I'm sure that was sort of when he became Vader. When he became Vader, he's just like, well, I've committed to it to this point. You're sort of gonna ride it out to the end and see where it goes, you know? I mean, there's not really many other places for Darth Vader to go, so I think he embraced it, you know, and was sort of also stuck in it too, because as Vader he's significantly less powerful than Anakin, you know.
Mhm. I guess like the thing that makes me like really kind of question a little bit is because there's definitely 20 years between when he becomes Vader and when Luke shows up, and the thing that makes me kind of question it a little bit is actually Darth Maul. You know, Darth Maul was a Sith Lord in episode 1, and, like, he wanted all this power, and, like, now that I'm reading the Darth Maul comics, he's just like, oh, I'm ready to do my thing, but Palpatine won't let me, and I just need to go out and do my thing, and oh my god, I need freedom. And so, like, but then we see Maul in Rebels, and I don't want to say that he's kind of grown, but he's kind of not either, and he's kind of stunted in that, but, like, there's clearly a different kind of character, and yes, he still has the hate and the anger, and, you know, wants revenge and everything, but it's different from the character that we see around the Phantom Menace time. So I'm wondering if Vader has, like, from the beginning of when he became Vader to the end when, right before, like, he met Luke, like, any time in that 20-year period, if he ever just stopped and just went, huh, what am I doing with my life?
Well, oh, probably all the time. Probably all the time whenever he was in his little back-to-bath and stuff like that. Yeah, I'm sure he had thoughts like that. You can't have too many thoughts like that, or probably Palpatine would pick up on them, you know. And Palpatine was sort of picking up on little doubts that Vader had too, you know.
Yeah. I don't think we've ever known what Vader's actual agenda for the narrative is. We don't know what he actually wants out of everything. So I thought about that. Let's see, I talked about that. Farkin is also such a whiner. Oh my god, he's a whiner. And then I realized, I don't think he actually fights anywhere in this episode.
He's not a fighter. He's a desk job guy.
But the thing is he's a captain, and he's a military officer, so he's probably had at least some military training, but you never see him holding a blaster. He never holds a detonator. Yeah. I mean, at least he should grab a blaster. Anybody can pick up a blaster and point and shoot.
He might have come from a, like, nepotism sort of, you know, from the Tarkin family has a rich tradition. They pushed him up through the ranks, you know. But he's definitely got that bureaucrat. He's a bureaucrat, you know. He's a pencil pusher. He's not a fighter, or he's a coward too. You know.
But yeah, but like, if it's a life and death situation, pick up a fucking blaster, Farkin. I mean, come on, pick up a blaster. I mean, that was the only thing. I was just like, you know, you don't even have to be a good shot, but you can, like, pick up a blaster and point it and shoot it.
He's got that, like, aristocracy vibe about him where it's just like, I'm not picking up a blaster. That's what the help is here for.
Yeah. But
the rabble.
Too bad he doesn't get shot. Okay, so I have two things about Echo's death. Ready?
Only two things?
Only two things, so... Because everything I could actually say about Echo's death would be spoilers for you, so I left a lot of it out. I take care of you. I take good care of you. I try. Okay, so two things. I do kind of wish we had more time with Echo so it hit closer to home. Because there was only really three episodes before this, which is Rookies, Clones, Cadets, and ARC Troopers. Two of them at the beginning of the season. And those are his only episodes, but he was, like, never really on his own. He was always, like, put in with other clones, with, like, Fives or the other Domino Squad members or anything. So it's not like when Rex, who had, like, standalone episodes. Like, if Rex got killed now, at least we've had standalone episodes with Rex that it would just be absolutely devastating if Rex died. So, like, Echo's death is portrayed as this, like, really big moment, but it didn't really come off that way because we don't have a lot of alone time with Echo, so... We don't know him very much, very well, actually.
But we know him more. It's like there's like tiers of characters to this, and he's like one of the ones where you don't know him like Rex, but you know who he is. You know his name, and you've seen him before.
Yeah.
So it's like there's a clone with a face, and the, like clone who got cut in half and clone who got shot in the face. We don't know who either of those guys were. You know, they were, you know, Joe Redshirt.
Yeah, so I do like that, and, you know, I like that on his armor. He's still, because in Rookies, Rex, like, had, like, the bug blood on his head, on his hand, and he wipes it on, like, Echo's chest, and he's just like, you're shinies. And I like that he always kept that on his plate, like, he always kept that from Rex, even when he became an ARC trooper, so I always like that. Okay, so this is the big moment, ready? This is the big thing about Echo's death. This is a huge moment for Fives. Again, I always keep saying that every time Fives is on screen, it's pushing him for future plots. So you remember how last week, how Fives was the only clone that was, like, doubting the plan, and he was the only one speaking out, not once, but he spoke out twice about how this plan seemed like a really bad idea, remember?
Yeah, and now his friend is dead.
And it's only gonna get worse from here. Echo's death is a huge turning point for Fives, and this is what we need to remember from this scene. From this point on, when we see Fives every time, he's going to slowly start losing loyalty for the Republic and fighting against it. Echo's death changes what Fives actually fights for. Do you remember the clone deserter Cut Laquane in season 2 when he fought for his family, the Twi'lek family?
Yep.
This is pretty much what Fives is turning into. And it happens right here, right now because of Echo's death. And he's only going to start fighting to protect his brothers, not his loyalty to the Republic. And it starts right here. He only fights for his brothers from here on out. And, I mean, we see it at the end of the episode. Like, Fives, you know, Echo died, and he looked right at the Jedi, and he was like, how are we going to get off this, guys? What are we going to do now? And he's the only clone speaking back to the Jedi. None of the other, like, Rex and Cody are willing to follow Obi-Wan and Anakin. And Fives is the only one that's just going, what's the point of this? Why? We're stuck. what's going on? You know, and it's so interesting to have this clone starting to talk back to the Jedi. So I think that's the difference between, say, like, Slick or Cut. You know, Slick was a traitor clone, but we never saw him change. He was just, you know, we got it, and he was just like, ha-ha,
just
I'm
revealed,
a traitor.
Yeah.
And then Cut, he was already in that place with Rex, you know? But what's cool about Fives is we're slowly starting to see Fives' transition over the course of several seasons, and that's what I like about Fives
so much.
Well, the
transitioning, this one had, like, little transition scenes for him and Ahsoka.
Mm-hmm. So from here on out, like, just watch Fives, because he's just going to get pushed further and further in that direction. And it's so important later on, and I can't say why because of Chris, but it's so important. It's going to be huge. It's going to be so big. I'm so excited. Yeah, so I can't wait. I can't wait till season 6. Anyway. So, yeah. So, my last note I have for the scene, for this act or episode is, this episode has only gotten better and better for me over the years and with rewatches. Knowing future episodes and knowing future character moments and knowing future plot lines and etc., there's a lot of subtext in this episode that makes it go only get better with time. It's like the more and more I watch it, the more and more I see. And I know if this is your first time watching this episode, it's really easy to overlook a lot of the subtext, especially with Fives, because it's not really apparent from the get-go. I would say this is a good episode to go and rewatch after you see the Umbara arc next season, and then the opening 4 episodes of season 6. And then go back and watch this episode, and you'll see it. It's so much easier to see after you see those 2 arcs. And so there's so much hidden stuff in this episode, and this is just one of those episodes just gotten better and better over time for me. Every time I see it, I always see something else I missed before.
And it shows planning. It shows their long-term planning, which is great.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, but yeah, that's all I have for Act 3. So, did you have anything else?
No. You ready to score this sucker up?
Score it up, Chris. How would you rate this one?
This one would have been a 9 for me if it wasn't for the molten lava
Are you kidding me?
Incident. So it's only getting knocked down half a point. So I'm giving this a solid, excellent 8.5.
Oh my god, you barely scored higher than me.
I scored higher than you?
By 0.5.
Oh, you know god, what? It's right there. I'm looking at it on the screen right now. I just had to scroll down like half an inch.
I'm going to meet you on
that
okay. one. I'm going to bump it up to 8.5. So, was there any particular reasons why you like that it was at
8.5? Maybe it's a big contrast from the last arc and the Mortis arc and
we like scored 5s and 4s.
Yes, and this is it's very Star Wars. I don't think this with the space platitude at the beginning. I don't think this one was Murphy's Law. It doesn't seem to be as much everything going wrong as this sort of give and take of like. It goes bad, it goes good, it goes bad, it goes good. It's going to sort of do that as long as they're there, you know. They just have to get out of there or else things will always be bad. But it's not like a failed mission. So far, their mission is actually pretty successful, except if you're a clone. But that's always the case, you know. But the way that it's put together and the way that it looks and sounds and the story is told is very Star Wars, and it's a very, you know, I don't want to say normal, but it's a very, you know, just sort of a norm, not going for like a really different feel or genre episode. This is a solid Clone Wars episode, and it's very Star Wars-y on top of it, so I loved it. And R2 with his own like set of droids, forget about it.
You know, I would argue that the Citadel arc is a really good first episodes for anybody watching, wanting to watch Clone Wars for the first time.
Yeah.
I would say these three episodes would be really good.
And it would give you, and it gives you Tarkin, so it gives you a really solid touch point to the, you know, the movies, the original trilogy.
Yeah, the
trilogy.
Carbon freezing last episode.
Yep. I would agree. I think this would be a very, and you even get a little glance at Yoda. A little peek at Yoda.
Oh, I'm dropping things. Yoda's knocking stuff off my desk.
Like a cat.
No, I don't have any of my kitties with me today. Poor girls. Anyway, I love this episode so much. To me, this is, you know, the Citadel arc is my hands down my favorite arc of season three. I just love this arc so much. It's a very strong balance of character stuff with plots and battles and stuff. This is an episode that I've grown to love more and more over the years because of Echo's death and Fives' reaction to it. And this is a huge turning point for Fives as a character. And you know, I love my clones. I love my clone babies. Fives is like my second favorite clone after Rex. So I love him. Of course, the big story here is Tarkin and Anakin bonding, which is fine, I guess. I mean, it's a thing. And I know that's the big story arc of this arc and stuff. I like that there's definitely scary stakes this week, and you just have a feeling that someone big isn't going to make it through at some point. You just don't know where it's at. And I like Sobek as a villain. I think he's a good villain. I think he's really fun. I think he's really smart. I like him a lot. I do wish that Ahsoka did a little bit more. She feels kind of like background-y. And, you know, Rex is there, but he hasn't done anything. Like, this is such a Rex-light season. Rex hasn't really done anything all season long, and I'm ready for Rex just to do stuff. And he's there, but it's okay. I'll take Fives having character development and Rex not speaking, so it's okay. It's a nice trade. So I'm going to mute you. I'm going to give it an 8.5 out of 10 as well.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought Ahsoka was just right in this episode. They didn't make it center on her, but, like...
I think last week did a little bit better because, like, you know, she actually had a point of being there. And she still does in this episode, too. It's just me. Ahsoka's one of my favorites. I could always use more Ahsoka, right. Like, all the time, so... But that's just a me thing. Same thing with Rex. I could always use more Rex and Ahsoka at all times. Though I have to say, it's really nice that Rex stood up for Ahsoka when Tarkin was like, why is a child leading us? And Rex was like, she's fully capable. Shut up. So I was okay with Rex telling off Tarkin. I could have like 22 minutes of Rex telling off Tarkin. That would make me happy. Well, as always, we would love to hear your feedback on iTunes. If you review us on iTunes, it helps people find the show. You can also get back to us on Twitter or on the Two True Freaks Facebook page. But we're, you know, I know we didn't read off the Facebook page last week, and we're not going to do it again this week because we got an iTunes review!
Woo-hoo!
It comes from PK421, a.k.a. Paul Kelly. And he wrote us a very nice review, so do you want to take it away, Chris?
All right. I love this review. Right. I found out about the Two True Freaks in March through so he's a new newbie. I found
newbies.
Out.
Welcome, Paul. Welcome.
I found out about the Two True Freaks in March through a friend of one of their podcasters, and that is where I found this show hosted by Chris and Hope. As great as the Clone Wars series is, this show makes it even more fun to watch. The tangents are great. You never know what they might start talking about. That's true, and this show was evidence of that.
That this actually knowing that we had this review was purposely why at the beginning of the episode I was like, do we have any tangents? I knew this review was here, so that's why I did that. I did it for you, Paul. Did it for you.
Yoda wise sayings in bed are a riot. Listen to the podcast to find out more. Well, if you're listening now, you're already listening. Also, they are very good at acknowledging comments on their posts on the Two True Freaks Facebook page, except for this week. You may not hear it immediately because their posts might be from a recording 2 or 3 weeks ago or more, but you will eventually hear it. Look forward to future episodes.
Aww,
welcome aboard, Paul Kelly.
Thank you. And yeah, I guess just so you know, like, we do record, like, we try to at least keep, like, 3 episodes in the can. Just for, like, you know, for example, you guys won't hear it because it's just going to come out weekly to you guys. But, for example, next week is my little sister's wedding, so I'm not going to be able to record with Chris next week.
But you'll hear a show.
Yeah, you'll still hear a show, but, like, that's the reason why we do it. We try to keep, like, about two, three, four episodes in the can just in case we do need to take a week off, like me. So that's the reason why, like, it might take a little while for us to get to your feedback.
Yes,
it gives you guys time to have feedback. You know, I find, you know, if we put this out every week, you guys would have to, like, rush to have feedback to us so we could read it. So I like doing this because it gives you guys, like, a couple weeks to put some feedback in case you guys, you know, need some little extra time and stuff, so.
You know how radio has, like, the 7-second delay? We just have, like, a month delay.
Yeah. Pretty much. Oh, it's my favorite time. So, Chris is a big baby, and he thinks that American Kit Kats are of the devil. Oh, that's really creepy. Don't do that again.
You don't like my baby cry?
No, I don't. That was really creepy. So, our friend Dario, who is also Chris's co-podcaster for Eat It and Beat It, is a flight attendant, and he started sending us Kit Kats from all around the world until he just started sending us candy from all around the world. So today we have Boo Boo Loo Boo. Do you know where this is from?
Yes, I do. The only note on Dario is he sent us notes on all these candies, or most of these candies. The only note it says on this is Boo Boo Loo Boo is from Mexico.
Mexico.
So Boo Boo Loo Boo's from Mexico, and my Boo Boo Loo Boo, you know how they like new and improved? This one just has it just says new image. So it probably has a new packaging from whatever the classic Boo Boo Loo Boo is, and we don't know.
The shape of it. Did you ever play Mario? You know, Super Mario?
Yes.
You know the, like, the little cactus balls that, like, where it was just, like, circle on top of circle on top of circle, and they would just kind of wiggle back and forth?
Yes.
That's what this looks like.
Oh, only have you opened yours? I haven't opened my Boo Boo Loo Boo yet. Okay.
Yeah, it's an odd shape.
It's like a... It looks like it looks like bar shaped on the package. Oh, I see what you mean. Ooh, it's like a gummy worm chocolate. It's like two peanuts. It's like a peanut standing on top of another peanut's head. Or a caterpillar sort of segmented body. But ooh, it's very like light and rubbery and loose. Because it's got, like, what? It looks like it's got marshmallow and then, like, a strawberry layer coated with chocolate. Okay.
Well, yeah, that's what it tastes like. It's very sweet, but there's, like, a marshmallow layer, and it almost tastes like a jam layer. Like, yes. Kind of like jam. I feel like Joey from Friends, like, jam! Good! Always good!
The jam layer has a little crunch around it.
Mm-hmm. I can't eat all that in one sitting.
It might just be sugar. It's good.
It is.
I'm a sucker for marshmallow. So if it's got a marshmallow layer in it, I'm already biased.
Oh, man. I didn't know you liked marshmallows. Mm-hmm. A friend of mine makes homemade fandom marshmallows.
Ooh.
She makes, like, chocolate chai marshmallows from scratch and stuff like that. Or, like, you know, like, key lime pie marshmallows, like, so they're, like, key lime pie flavor.
Yeah, that sounds delightful. I just sometimes when I go to the grocery store, I'll buy a bag of marshmallows, and that'll be my dessert after dinner, is I'll just, like, eat 5 or 10 marshmallows or 15.
I'll see if I can, like, next time I see her, because sadly she lives, like, 2 hours away from me, so I don't always get to see her as much as I'd like to. Next time I see you, though, I'll see if I can get some more marshmallows on mom. So, yeah, I didn't know you liked marshmallows.
I like the Boo Boo Loo Boo.
I like it. It's not my favorite.
It might be. If it wasn't marshmallowy and this light, it might be too sweet. But as it is, I'm digging it. I'm a little hungry too, so that helps.
Yeah. Marshmallows, I either like them or I don't. Like, it's a weird kind of in between for me. Though I will say, like, one of my favorite things growing up, was peanut butter and marshmallow toast. And my mom used to, like, put a piece of bread and put, like, a layer of peanut butter. and then just take a hand of those small marshmallows and put them on top, and then you stick them in the oven on broil, so it only cooks it from the top. And right when those, like, peanut butter, like, right when the marshmallows start browning, that's when you take it out. And it's delicious. That was one of my favorite things growing up.
That's like high-class fluffernutter.
Yeah, like, that was just one of my favorite things growing up, and it was peanut butter marshmallow toast. And, like, sometimes you could put, like, a little bit of syrup on top, but it was still good. You always had to have, a glass of milk with it. Oh, it was so amazing. One of my favorite, like, foods growing up. I always got that, like, on, like, special things. You know, if I, like, did good in school, I would get peanut butter marshmallow toast. All right,
what if you did this? You took two pieces of toast that you toasted. One side, you just put peanut butter on. The other side, you melt the marshmallow on and just put them together like a sandwich, like a peanut butter and fluff sandwich.
Hell, in that case, I would just make two pieces and just put it together.
That's what I'm saying. One piece with the... So you'd have the toast, and you'd get that sort of where the peanut butter starts to melt a little bit.
Yeah, it does that anyway, like when you cook it.
It's
going to
do that when you put it together with the marshmallow anyway, but... Hmm.
You're going to try it now. Peanut butter
marshmallow. I am going to try that.
Yeah, make sure you use broil, though. That way it only cooks it from the top.
No, that's something I'm going to... I might bring up at work as something for kids on the kids menu. Yeah.
Though I will say, my mom's other marshmallow trick, when you pick up a bag of marshmallows in the store, if you can smell the marshmallows through the bag, it's still good. If you can't smell them through the bag, they're old.
Oh.
Yeah, you should be able to pick them up and smell
the marshmallows.
I love the
smell of marshmallows.
Yeah, and it should be a very strong smell, and you should be able to smell it. If you can't smell it, they've been sitting there for a while.
It's like thumping a melon.
Well, I don't have anything else, do you?
No.
Well, where can people find you, Chris?
You can find me at twotruefreaks.com. That, folks, is a website. It's a website chock full where we just shovel podcasts into it, like, every day. Like, we shovel, like, 15, 20,000 podcasts into it until it's just loaded and swollen with podcasts of all types, if they're of the nerd type, and some stuff on the edge of nerddom. Well, no, you know what? No, that's not true. It's all nerd. Because we just added a wrestling show. That's all nerd. That's all fandom.
You know, so I was having this conversation, though, with my niece. Like, my niece, she's little, and someone called her a nerd. And her mom was, like, she didn't know what that word meant. And she was just like, "What's a nerd, Mom?" And her mom was like, "Well, pretty much what Aunt Hope is." And so I was just like, "Oh, for one, that's sweet." But then I called her up, and I was just like, being a nerd just means that you're knowledgeable on a topic.
Yeah, like, and she's like, "I'm Mary Poppins, y'all."
Yeah, I mean, like, because there's, like, sports nerds, there's music nerds, there's car nerds, automobile nerds. Like, nerd just means that you're very knowledgeable on a subject.
Well,
nerd is not
a bad thing. Were they trying to diss her on that, or?
Yeah, but she didn't know what it meant, because she's, like, 9. She was like, "What's a nerd?" So... But
because nowadays you don't know if somebody's dissing you if they call you a nerd, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's just other dumb kids at school.
Yeah.
Messing with my baby. I'm sorry, though. Where can people find you, Chris?
As I just said, Two True Freaks, it's a website. And so it has www's in front of it and all that. And it's just loaded. Loaded. We got everything, and there's one man who listens to it all, and that's Gene, the podcasting machine.
Ba-da-ba-ba-da-bum. Gene!
That was pretty good. No, that was pretty good. That was some good timing, especially without any visual cues. I like that. There was a little lag in it with the speed. You'd be good in a band, Hope. Good in a band.
Really? Because you sounded, like, way off from me. You were like, and then I was just like, "Oh, shit, he's off from me," and I waited. And I was like,
"No, I put a little swing into it. I put a little swing into it, and you followed it, so put a little swing into the Gene song. Speaking of swinging Gene songs, I'm throwing the swinging Gene song on right now from Gene the Dancing Machine.
Wait, what was that kid that you used to push on the swing?
Swing World, Miranda.
Gene, the podcast machine. Listening to all the podcasts on Two True Freaks. Gene. Sorry.
Gene actually replied, like, from one of our earlier episodes where I was feeling sorry for him because we kept adding more episodes for him, or more shows for him to listen to, and he was like, I was listening to those shows before anyway, so. You can't beat the podcasting machine.
I just don't understand when he wins all the time.
Nobody leans on the podcasting machine.
No one puts Gene in a corner.
No. But Hope, you're active. How are you doing on the internet these days?
Doing all right. You know, doing my thing. Doing the internet stuff.
Yeah. Interneting around.
Interneting around. Yeah. You can find me at our JGS and Jedi Twitter. It's at JGS and Jedi, all one word. Also, you can find me at Hope Molinax. And I'm also the news writer for whatthefangirl.com. I'm starting to finally get back into the swing of things. Today, I wrote an article about how David Diggs, who was in Hamilton, got cast to be in the new Snowpiercer television show. And I wrote the entire article in Hamilton puns. Which was...
I forgot about the Snowpiercer television show. That's an interesting idea.
You know, I really want to see the movie. I haven't seen it yet. It's been on my to-watch list.
It's good.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, it came out in 2013. It's been on my to-watch list in 2013. I just haven't really sat down and done it yet. But now that David Diggs, who I just really adore and love, is going to be in the television show, I kind of want to go ahead and watch the movie so that I can do that. The television show is set 7 years after the events of the movie.
Oh, interesting. I thought they might just do... Well, I can't say anything without spoiling the movie, but... Oh, okay, that's very interesting.
I kind of know the base premise and got a little bit spoiled. Like, aren't they, like, eating people or something? Aren't they, like, Soylent Greening it or something?
Well, if it's taken up where the... movie leaves off. It's too spoilery to.
Okay. I don't know it.
But the movie is very timely. As far as the movie is definitely a wealth disparity metaphor.
Yeah.
And but... not very thinly veiled, but Tilda Swinton is amazing in it.
Tilda Swinton is amazing always.
Right, yeah, but I said, when her character comes out, it's just like, oh my god. And Captain America's pretty good in it, too.
Chris Evans is always amazing.
And there's a Churrit sort of character in it, too, so I think you'll enjoy it.
Yeah, like I said, it's been on my to-watch list, but I'm like, that's what it is. So I'm the news writer for whatthefangirl.com. Come out and check me out. So, yeah.
I'm excited because they're making Dread into a TV show.
Really?
Yes, I love that movie. And if they make it, and they're vowing to make it more like the comics, which will be so the Judge Dread comics are so good, so good. And if they put the humor of the humor and the satire of the comics into it, it's going to be crazy fun.
You know what I saw that I'm kind of on the fence about? Seth MacFarlane's putting out, like, a farce Star Trek show.
It looked like it could be funny. It looked like it could be fun. And I just think my thought was it was done with Galaxy Quest.
And that's kind of how I feel that, too.
And Galaxy Quest not only did it really well, but they did it with a lot of heart. And Seth MacFarlane to me is funny. He's good at throwing out gags and putting funny situations in, but he doesn't put a lot. There's not a lot of heart in it. You know what I mean? He'll have.
Yeah.
He might have some situations where with the married couple and stuff that might have some emotional resonance in it, but that's not what he's good at. And so it'll probably be fun, you know, it'll probably be fun and funny, but I'm not expecting, you know, I'm not expecting a lot out of it. But boy, it really has that Star Trek The Next Generation look to it.
That's kind of how I feel about it too, because like Galaxy Quest is my favorite movie of all time. Like that
Which
is my
so
favorite
funny
movies.
That you're not familiar with Star Trek, because Galaxy Quest is like the greatest tribute to Star Trek ever. That's not
yeah.
Star Trek.
But like it's hands down like my favorite movie of all time. But like at the same time, like I kind of agree. As I was watching the Seth MacFarlane trailer, I was like, this looks like it could be really funny. But at the same time, like, I feel like this is nothing new because Galaxy Quest has already done it.
It won't have the heart of Galaxy Quest, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, you can't beat characters like, you know, like Alan Rickman and, like, and the guy who plays...
I'd rather, I'd love to see it, a Galaxy Quest TV show would be fantastic.
Oh, man, but I would have liked to see it before Alan Rickman passed away. I don't think I could watch it now without it because he was, like, just so good in that movie.
Yeah, he was. Everybody was. I'm kind of a Tim Allen hater, too. And that movie was perfect for him. It was perfect for him.
Yeah.
Perfectly cast.
Tim Allen, I'm kind of on the fence about. I either really like Tim Allen or I really don't and stuff, but it really just depends on what he's doing. Because I think some roles are better suited for him than others. So it really depends. I either really like Tim Allen or
I never found
him
very funny. Playing it straight, sort of, as Shatner in Galaxy Quest was perfect. And he looked the part. He had that sort of doughy, but at the same time leading man look. And the negative things about him actually played to the character of it. So it worked, you know. It's like, I could watch... I hate... What the hell is his name? He puts out so many bad movies that it's like... South Park made the whole episode about him.
What's one of the movies he's put out?
Billy Madison.
Oh, God! What's his name?
Yeah, why are we blanking on everybody's name today?
Adam Sandler.
I hate Adam Sandler. I find him not funny at all. But when I... Like, he was good in Punch Drunk Love, though. In a serious role, it worked. And it was a lot of the things that I don't like about him in a serious role worked. But it is... When he does comedy, I can't stand him because he's not funny to me. So when I'm watching him, I'm just like, dude, you're not funny. You're not funny. Stop trying to be funny. So... Yeah, Tim Allen was okay. Anyway, there's another tangent for you there.
There you go. That was for you, Paul.
And one thing I didn't mention, go to our Facebook page. We got a Facebook page, and the Two True Freaks Facebook page and the Two True Freaks Cantina. And that's where you'll see us post these episodes, and then we can talk to you through there.
Yeah,
and
Paul, come
maybe I'll even come up with
page.
A voice for you. I need some more Patrick Dellenmore. I want to do some more squeaky voice teen.
Yeah, Paul, come say hi to us on the Facebook page. We'd love to chat with you and stuff like that. So,
yep.
Come say hi. Well, I don't have anything else. So, I guess next time we'll finish up the Citadel, and then we'll be right at the end of the series. We only have two more episodes after that, and then the season will be over.
Yeah, we're getting close to the season wrap up.
I'm getting
so
excited.
Interesting one.
I'm getting so excited for season four!
We gotta come up with our questions for each other.
Oh, God.
Start thinking about them.
This is gonna be the shortest Rex Evolution ever, because he was barely in the season
at
all.
Not really much, yeah. It'll be like a paragraph long. It's good for you. It'll give your vocal cords a break, because those Rex Evolutions are rough on you, man.
Oh, no. Don't you know I'm gonna be, like, making up, like, Rex's vacation
Backstory.
To Disneyland or something? It's going to be at Disney, just going, oh, man, when Ahsoka was away, I decided to go to Disney World, and then I rode the teacups, and it was fun. So, you know, that's what I'm going to do. So, I guess until next time, the firkin, not firk up your life.
He's gonna fark up a lot of lives in his career.
Yeah. Oh, we could play out on Spice Girls. Fellas of the world, fark up your life. Every boy, every girl, fark up your life. People of the world, fark up your life.
Alright, we're out of here.
Hey, don't diss the Spice Girls.
If you shop at Amazon.com, please consider using the link at TwoTrueFreaks.com to shop there. If you use this link to go to Amazon and then you shop, Two True Freaks gets a little cut of what you buy, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. So you get to shop as usual and help out the Two True Freaks at the same time.
Visit our website at TwoTrueFreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled T-W-O. TrueFreaks.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks.
Dumbass.
If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.